For the transcription, this will be the Thick Who Is policy development process on going from 7:30 to 9, April 8th, 2013.
Thanks, Brandon. This is Mikey O'Connor, the working group chair. For those of you who are just coming in, there's juice and coffee and treats in the back. That's our bribe to get you here at this hour in the morning at an ICANN meeting. Feel free to partake. And since, you know, we're not terribly stressed in terms of seats at the table, if you want to sit at the table instead of way in the back, feel free to come forward. And with that, I thought what we would do, instead of the normal roll call, we would just go around the room and let everybody say their name and a little affiliation into the microphone. This is one of the rare treats of a working group, is that when you're at an ICANN meeting and you're doing a face-to-face working group, you get to put faces and voices together. And so this is always a real treat. And so I think we'll just start over there and circle on around. You're on. So you punch the little talk button. That lights up the mic and carry on.
Good morning. My name is Marie-Laure Lemineur. I'm with MPOC and with the working group and also the sub-team on data protection and privacy. Thank you.
Klaus Stoll, MPOC, but also the executive director of the Knorpel Knowledge Partnership. And the Knorpel Knowledge Partnership has identified internet governance as one of their main themes over the next 2 years, and that's why I'm very happy to be here. Thank you.
Frédéric Guillemot from Mail Club, registrar, and I'm part of the working group, and I'm happy to see you face to face.
Jonathan Zook from the Association for Competitive Technology.
Alan Greenberg at Large Advisory Committee. I'm on the work group, the data protection work group, and I chair the escrow work group, I think. I'm not sure. I know I chair some work group. I think it's the escrow one. we merged two together. I never remember the name.
I'll try this one.
Just for me, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. No charge, huh?
And it's going to do two stereo. Aren't we special? We're off to a brisk start here,
Don. Can I go home now?
I'm taking my microphone back.
Okay. There we go. Any rate, I'm Don Blumenthal with the Public Interest Registry. I'm on three of the sub-teams, but as you might have just gotten from Alan, the privacy one seems to dwarf them all. I'm the kind of the team leader, or whatever we call them, for the data protection and privacy group.
I'm Mikey O'Connor. I bet you all recognize my voice. I'm the chair of the working group and a member of the ISP constituency.
My name is Marika Konings. I'm from ICANN staff and the main staff support person for this working group.
Steve Sheng, ICANN staff.
Erica Randall, ICANN staff.
Lars Hoffman, ICANN staff.
Dan Halloran, ICANN staff.
Leaving the ICANN staff neighborhood. I'm Steve Metallitz. I'm here representing the Coalition for Online Accountability, and I'm a member, which is a member of the intellectual property constituency. Thank you.
And Barry Cobb, ICANN staff, back in the neighborhood.
Just out of the neighborhood, Carlton Samuels. I'm a member of the Large Advisory Committee.
And let's see, Wendy, are you on the working group? You're welcome to sit at the table in any respect. Okay. Wendy Seltzer, NCUC member and and sitting at the person at sitting at the table type person. Olaf, go ahead.
Olaf Kolkman, Nelnet Labs. I'm here because I chair the IETF WIRTS working group.
Thanks, Olaf. I didn't see you sit down. This is sort of aimed at the folks that are sitting in the chairs in the back. How many of you, for you, is this the first time you've ever seen a working group meeting of the ICANN flavor? Just raise your hand if this is sort of new material, if Thick Who is a new thing that you haven't run into before. A bit of a group there. Here's what we thought we would do. We'll spend a little bit of time sort of introducing the work that we're doing. And also, I'm going to take the opportunity to sort of make the distinction between what working groups do, which is what this is. This is just a working group meeting that happens to be held during the ICANN session. We take this opportunity to meet face-to-face because it's such a great chance to put faces and voices together. So this is a bit different than the typical ICANN meetings that you'll be attending this week. And one of the ground rules that I would encourage the members of the working group to pay attention to is because we have folks that are new to the working group process, to ICANN, and to the work that we're doing in the room, tend to try and ease off on the acronyms, try to explain a little bit more about what you're talking about than normal. I know it's going to be hard for us to get way far away from jargon, but to the extent that we can, I think it's helpful for folks who are coming in. A true working group call is practically a foreign language, but we'll try and conduct this in English as much as we can. The other thing that I just want to do sort of an advertisement for what working groups are, at least, and this is purely a personal view. This is not my opinion as the chair of the working group. This is just a personal observation, and that is that working groups are where the pieces of ICANN come together to hammer out solutions, hopefully consensus solutions, to problems and puzzles that the working group is chartered to address. And so unlike almost any other part of ICANN, the goal here is to get to agreement rather than to highlight the disagreements. And so this is a working session of a group of people who are trying to create something together. And this is my absolutely favorite part of ICANN. We meet once a week for an hour on the phone. And in terms of, Brandon, are you still there? Do you have the ability to throw the Adobe room up on the wall? Because if you do, yeah, that would be fantastic. One of the things that I want to show the folks who are new to the working group process is the view, and I'll just leave this running throughout the meeting, is the view of what we see in that one-hour meeting every week. This is a shared, collaborative online workspace that we use to share documents, to have a chat with each other, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, hopefully it's not my computer, yeah, because I'm going to share my screen. So can we share your screen, Marika? Yeah, quit reading the gossip column over at Domain Insight. I'm not sure. I think we do.
Do we want?
Oh, you mean on the phone. That's a good point. Alan just raised the question. Do we have anybody in the working group on the phone? Natalie? Just Natalie on the phone? Okay. Thanks, Alan.
Yeah, I was looking for the moment.
Okay. If somebody joins, can you break in and let us know so that we can introduce them to the group as well? Just as you always do, just whack me when I get going too long. Okay, so now we've got... Cool. There it is. This is the workspace. You can see it up on the wall now. It may be hard to read from way at the back, but I'm going to use this workspace in a minute interactively. And so for those of you who are sitting towards the back of the room, you may want to move forward and feel free to fill in some of these chairs around the edge if it's hard to do that. Oh, to the... Ah, good, okay. And yes, that's another thing. You all can join this room by, if you're online, if you go through the meeting schedule to the page for this meeting, the link to this room is in that schedule, and you're more than welcome to log into the room and put it on your own screen, which will be a lot, at least for me, it would be a lot easier to see. Okay, I think that's kind of it on housekeeping. So let me talk through the agenda. I think what we're going to do today is mostly focus on one topic. And that's a topic that's... I mentioned earlier that basically what this working group does, and all working groups do, is they work on puzzlers. They work on, you know, some people would say problems... I like to say puzzles. This is more of solving a puzzle in the Sherlock Holmes sense. Aha, this is a two-pipe puzzle kind of puzzle. And the puzzle that's been getting a lot of attention in this working group and is probably the most interesting one is the one that has been assigned to the subteam that Don chairs, the data privacy subteam. And so what I thought we would do is just work on that today as a working group. I think it's a huge opportunity in this face-to-face environment where we get a little bit more bandwidth with each other to sort of see people's faces. We also have the opportunity of having some awfully smart folks from ICANN staff who are usually not available to us, and so I want to sort of take advantage of that opportunity. And we'll just work on that in the usual way that we work on stuff in the working group. And the last little bit of ground rule stuff is if you're in the audience and we get into a part of this conversation that you feel very strongly about and want to contribute to, you're welcome to do that. And the way to let me know that you want to do that is to just head up to one of the open chairs in front of a microphone and wave at Barry, who gave me a very hard time yesterday. And as a result, I'm giving him a job. Barry's going to manage the queue for this meeting. Normally, I manage the queue on the call because I'm able to look at the chat room and all that stuff. But because of the way this is laid out, and because Barry was so mean to me, Barry's the person to wave at when you want to get in the queue. And so, Barry, if you can keep track of both the folks here in the room and the folks on the chat, that would be fantastic. I think that's it. Any questions before we get going? I know it's a blather at the beginning, and I know it's really early, but there you go. Okay, I'm going to share my screen at this point, and hopefully this will work. Let's see how this works. Oh, for heaven's sakes. Adobe Flash. It's coming pretty fast. Sorry, folks. I'm using an old computer that's been scrubbed, and so as a result, it's pulling down an extra add-in. The thing that you'll see in a minute on the screen is an open source program called FreeMind, which is an outlining program that we use to document a lot of the work that we do. And if you want to read these files, the program's available at SourceForge, and links to that are on our wiki. Okay, so now the download has happened. It's... Oh, please don't. It's reloading Adobe Connect. I should have done this beforehand. I really should. I'm terribly sorry, folks. While this is loading, let me go through a little story about what the difference is between thick and thin who is, which I'll do without notes because Adobe has just captured my whole screen. And now that more folks are in the room, let me just get another show of hands. How many folks don't know? No, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to just go through it. Because we did this yesterday, and for folks who are new, it's very intimidating to raise your hand and say, I don't know something. So I'm going to talk you through thick and thin who is while this ding, dang, ripping, frippin' thing loads. There's altogether too much fun being had over there, Wendy. Wendy was mean to me yesterday, too. She was really mean to me. She just whacked me off at the knees. I'm getting big nods around the room on that. So there. come on, Adobe Connect. Please, God. Why now? All right, here we go. You know, I've seen more different clocks on my screen in the last 20 minutes, feels like, while this is loading. There. Now, are you going to let me share my screen? Please let me share my screen. This is a good start. It's... It's sharing. Yay! Now. Okay. So... At last. This is going to be much easier to see on your local computer if you want to log into the room. Let's start. So in a thick... The other thing is I can't spell. And I can't type very well. Let's go through the data. So who is all about information that's published on the internet about domain names. And we'll start with a thick registry, and then we'll do a thin registry and describe the kinds of data that are available. So in a thick registry, there are registries, and there are registrars. In the registry is the one entity that keeps track of all of the domain names in a top-level domain, like .org. I'll pick on Don's organization, PIR. There is one registry for .org, and .org is managed by PIR, and they keep track of every name in the .org space. .org names are sold by a large number of registrars. So there's these two different kinds of entities. And the debate that we are having in this working group is the question as to whether in the generic top-level domain names like .com, .org, .jobs, .info, those registries should all be in this thick model. So in the thick registry model, the registry keeps track of data about the domains, and they keep track of data about the registrant, and they keep track of data about various contacts. The registrar also keeps track of this information, because the registrar, the person who sells the name, is also the entity that's responsible for collecting the data. So the registrar also collects and publishes domain data, registrant data, and contact data. And actually, the registrar collects all that data and then pushes it up to the registry. In a thin registry model, the registry only only domain data is at the registry. And the registrar captures all three again. So they keep all three types of data, but they only publish the domain-related data to the registry. The question that this subgroup has been working on is the privacy issues that arise when the transition, if we recommend that all registries in the GTLDs, the generic top-level domains, migrate to the thick model, I think the knottiest problem that this subgroup has been working on is what are the privacy implications for the registrants who have registered their information in the thin model with the expectation that only domain data would be captured at the registry during that transitional period where, you know, they've registered their name in, a jurisdiction where there are strong privacy protections in local law. And now that data is going to be published in a registry where perhaps that local law is different, and those registrants are going through that transition essentially whether they want to or not. So far, how am I doing on capturing this issue? If I fall off the rails, this is not a shy working group. They will let me know. But, you know, I'm just giving you extra permission, and Don is now taking advantage of that. Go ahead.
Well, the transition is certainly a big issue, and I think in a real sense it's what people are focusing on, but I think the mandate of this group is a bit larger than that, and with the group meaning the working group. So we've been looking at the transition issues, but we've also been looking at in future new GTLD rounds, should there be any after the entertainment of the current new GTLD round, should thick registries be mandated again as they are currently, or should the thin registries come back into the picture?
Thanks, Don. So I wanted to sketch this out a little bit on the screen and sort of use this as an opportunity to bring you, especially those of you who aren't part of the working group, sort of up to speed. I'm sorry that we can't go into this in all kinds of depth, but I hope this gives you at least a little bit of a sketch as to what we're working on.
So, Mikey?
Yes, go
question.
Ahead.
Since I'm sort of new to this working group and observing from the sideline, is there, can you sketch out the broad ways this working group is thinking in doing this? You sketch the problems,
yeah.
But are there directions of solutions that the working group is zooming in, or is there a consensus that is already captured?
On this issue, today's the day for that. This is sort of the working group has divided itself into some sub-teams, and one of the sub-teams is the one that's working on this transitional issue. Don chairs that sub-team because I hate him. And, you know, this is sort of the day that we're going to try to get going here. Now, I've got Barry.
Don with
Barry's,
like that.
Barry's the manager of the queue, and so I'm going to hand it over to Barry and just be blabbery Mike. And
so Steve and then Marika.
Okay.
Thank you, Steve Metalitz. It might be helpful for Olaf and for others if Marika or someone could just list, and maybe I missed this when I stepped out for a couple minutes, just list all the issues that we have that are in our charter to address, and many, several of which we've already, you know, at least tentatively addressed,
yeah.
Rather than focusing exclusively on this one issue that is in discussion in a subteam.
That's a really good point, Steve. Thanks. Maybe what we'll do is we'll let Marika go to work on that, and when you get to the point where you can rattle them off, you're there. Go for it. By the way, did you know that Marika, in addition to working for ICANN, has two other jobs? I'll bet you didn't know this. First, she's a brain surgeon. She only works on sort of cabinet-level people and above. She saves lives all the time. The other thing is that she's the lead guitar player in an internationally acclaimed rock band, along with working with us here at ICANN. Go for it.
Yeah, I just do this in my spare time, Mikey. Thanks. So yeah, this is Marika. So that's actually what I wanted to add to Ola's point, because basically the working group has been given a charter, and basically its main task is to provide the GNSO Council with a policy recommendation regarding the use of thick whois by all registries, both existing and future. And as part of this, its conversation or discussion, it needs to review the following elements with regard to this question. So it's response consistency, stability, accessibility, impact on privacy and data protection, cost implication, synchronization and migration, authoritativeness, competition and registry services, existing WHOIS applications, data escrow, and registrar port 43 WHOIS requirements. And once it has gone through that list, and should it come to a consensus that thick WHOIS should be required for all GTLDs, the PDP working group is also expected to consider the cost implications for GTLD registries, registrars, and registrants of a transition to thick WHOIS, guidelines as to how to conduct such a transition, and also consider whether there should be any special provisions and or exemptions needed for GTLD registries which operate a thick WHOIS but provide tier access.
And now, Olaf, to your point, which was, so where are we at on consensus? We've come pretty close to consensus on several of those issues. Don't quiz me real hard on which one is which, because I can't come up with them by memory. But essentially what has emerged is that were it not for the issue that we're working on today, there's a pretty strong tendency amongst the working group to support the notion, at least in the ones that we've reviewed so far, towards migrating in the direction of thick WHOIS. But, and this is another advertisement for the working group process. The working group process operates by consensus, and we certainly don't have consensus yet on this issue. And until we get to some sort of consensus on this issue, we can't recommend, because we need to have this puzzle solved as well. Steve, then, and Carlton, do you want to get in the queue? Okay, go ahead, Steve.
Mikey, it might be, you know, we don't have consensus on it because you maybe might need to describe the process by which we would reach that. We have an active subgroup on it. We've been discussing it. There have been two or three papers circulated, and I think many of us haven't yet been persuaded that there are any issues that are significant issues that are specific to the thick who is environment as contrasted with the overall issues about who is that will be very much discussed in about 2.5 hours in the plenary, and on which there's an expert working group that's been chartered, and on which there have been board resolutions to address these issues, and on which, you know, there's an interface with the weirds activity. And those are real issues, but what we're supposed to be focusing on here is really a narrower question about the thick who is requirement and whether that presents any additional issues. It's worth also recalling the context that we have had a transition of a major TLD from thin to thick. It was .org, and we've been asking for information about problems that arose there, and I think the evidence is that there were not significant problems in this area or in most other areas. And we also have the experience of, well, I'm sure hundreds of thousands, probably millions of registrants in thick registries, TLDs that have thick registries, that in which the kind of transfer that you're talking about up there occurs every day. And a registrant may be in country A, the registrar may be in country B, the registry may be in country C. You could have a whole range of different applicable privacy laws, and this happens every day, thousands of times. So that's kind of the context in which we are looking at this. So I just wanted to provide that, and really, I think I'm a little concerned that your description of it makes it sound as though we've run up against this giant boulder in our path, and we're stymied about how to climb it or get around it. But I think we need to push. You know, we need to have a method for deciding when we have talked this issue out and can move forward on it. Thank you.
Yeah, and again, this is a bit of an advertisement for the working group process. You know, there are different levels of consensus. There's full consensus, which is unanimous consensus. There's consensus, which is a situation where there's very broad agreement with perhaps one or two points of view that have been heard and acknowledged, but that haven't carried the day. There's consensus, and now I get fuzzy because I've never gone into these two zones because we've always been at full consensus in my working group.
Strong support and significant opposition.
Strong support but significant opposition, and then
divergence,
which is not consensus. And one of my roles as the chair, well, one of the roles is to create an environment where we are successful at getting to full consensus, or at least as close as we can. But another one of my roles as the chair is to make the call as to which of those four layers of consensus we're at, and then put that out to the working group for agreement or disagreement. And, you know, if there's disagreement on that, there's a process to resolve it. And the reason that I'm painting the picture this way right now, Steve, is because I really want to create a broad avenue for this discussion. Because I think that if we get through this discussion and arrive at a conclusion that's agreeable to everybody, that we've moved dramatically forward. But you're absolutely correct that this does not stop the process in its tracks. It's just something that I'm very motivated to try and figure out a way through. And so I'm trying to create a big space for that. Barry? Don, go for it.
Okay, if you insist. I wanted to just echo Steve's point. This is a very, the term has been used by many, including me, rat's nest of issues that I don't think the other sub-teams have addressed, to the level that other sub-teams haven't had to deal with. So when we say that we don't have a consensus, it's not that we've had a battleground, it's just that this specific sub-team has had to take a lot more time than the others. I think there aren't many people here who are active in the sub-team. So I just want to suggest, as a counterpoint, the views that Steve mentioned have been are certainly active on have been active in the phone calls, and we meet once a week. But there's also been a view suggested that first that questions how much these issues, even though they have not come up because they have never really been examined. And now it's our turn to finally do that. We have an expert group that we sought out. It was involved in the PIR transition 10 years ago, which was before my time. And so far, I've been disappointed in their level of involvement to answer our questions. But so far, we've had no indication it's ever really was even talked about then. So some people in the sub-team have suggested now's the time, particularly with the changing landscape of privacy laws. And if nothing else, look at what's out there, look what might be happening, look what is happening in the privacy space, and even if we don't make any conclusions, and I'm not sure we have the resource to do that, at least make some recommendations for other groups, such as General Counsel, to consider in terms of looking at ICANN policies now and either new ones or refining existing ones. And I think those are the two extremes of the working group. And we have a draft that's floating that I wrote on the plane. I've never completed a 10-page memo on a plane flight before, but when you've got 13 hours. And hopefully we'll really pick it up and come up with something fairly soon after Beijing. But this meeting is going to be, I think, very useful because we've got the advantage of being able to hear from people who are beyond this seven or eight folks who've been looking at it weekly since February, early March, whatever it was.
Thanks, Don. Okay, I think we're sort of done with the preliminaries. Sorry that they took so long for those of you who are old hands, but this is an unusual circumstance, being in an ICANN meeting. And I think the first question that I would like to put out there is, where does the requirement for the publication of who is data come from? Is it coming from the registry agreement with ICANN? Is it coming from the registrar agreement? And I'm taking advantage of the fact that we have senior staff here, which is wonderful, and especially Dan and Steve, thanks a million for coming. And so I'm going to sort of take advantage of the fact that you're here. I'm just curious, and let me frame that a little bit better. Let's take a thin registry. Let's pick on .jobs. The requirements for the who is, the data that's published and how it's collected and so on, where does that come from? Go ahead, Dan.
Thanks, Mike. This is Dan Halloran from ICANN staff, and I'm on the legal team. I'm the Deputy General Counsel, actually. So you pointed to the right places. There's a set of obligations. Start with the registry. ICANN has a registry agreement with the .jobs registry, and that specifies that .jobs, the registry operator, has to operate a whois service and publish certain data. And then with each registrar that works with .jobs also has a registrar accreditation agreement, and that ICANN registrar RA also specifies that the registrar has to publish certain data. And those are two separate obligations each of those entities owe to ICANN through those contracts. Additionally, for .jobs or for any registry, there's a registry registrar agreement, which in the case of .jobs is a sponsored TLD, and it was up to them to... ICANN doesn't dictate the form of that registry registrar agreement, so we'd have to look at that, and I don't know if it's publicly available. ICANN approves changes to it, but I don't even know if we have a recent version. But there could be obligations in that registrar agreement, also about what the registrar has to give to .jobs and what .jobs is going to do with it.
Okay, so one of the scenarios that I'd like to explore a little bit is one that, and I'm going to, Avery, I'm going to be picking on you in a minute, so just giving you a heads up, fair warning. I want to paint sort of a hypothetical. Let's say that John Berard and I were kidding about this. I'm a Democrat living in Nebraska, the state of Nebraska in the United States, which is an extremely conservative state. And I want to protect my identity because of fear that I'm going to be chased by Republicans wielding shotguns. And so I register my name in .jobs with a registrar located in a country or let's say a jurisdiction with very strong privacy protection woven into its legal structure, like Europe, let's say, or Iceland or someplace like that. Where would the requirements for that registrar come from? And would they be the same in all of those countries, or would they be different depending on what country I'm in? So in other words, the scenario is that I want to be able to shop for a privacy-friendly registrar, and this is, I think, at the nub of this issue, because the presumption is that people have done that shopping already. They've chosen their registrar based on that privacy, and when we transition to THIC, we're going to erase that choice that they made, because when it goes to THIC, it will go to the privacy regime of wherever the registry is located, rather than the registrar. That's sort of the nub of the issue. So if we circle back to the privacy shopping, jurisdiction shopping thing, would the requirements be the same for a registrar in Iceland as they would be for a registrar in Atlanta, given this set of deals?
Thanks, Mikey. It's Dan again. So just a note of caution that I'm running on a little short sleep, and it's a little bit tricky to untangle. So this is the kind of stuff I usually rather do in like a memo or a presentation or something prepared. But I can say that ICANN has signed the exact same RAA with 1,000-plus registrars, and it has the exact same WHOIS obligations across all those 1,000 registrars, whether they're in Iceland or Nebraska or whatever. We have a GNSO-recommended and board-adopted ICANN procedure for dealing with conflicts should they arise. We've never actually used this procedure with a registrar. But we have a procedure in place. If a registrar ever comes to us, whether it's in Nebraska or Iceland, and says, hey, I've got a problem with my local law, I need to modify my WHOIS obligations, we have steps we'd walk through to deal with that situation. And then just a footnote I want to put on your question, just to note it. I don't want to get into all the complexity of it, but if you're sitting in Nebraska, it might not just be the laws of where your registrar is located that apply, because there's also, there might be Nebraska laws or U.S. laws, so it's not necessarily just the laws of the registry or the registrar. It's you're the subject of that data, and therefore the laws where you sit can be relevant too.
So maybe I picked a bad. So if I live in Europe, I the registrant, the local laws that bind me, and this gets us to the European Union discussion about privacy rights that's ongoing right now, correct? That those laws may change in a month or two. Not in a month or two. Steve is shaking. Maybe years or two. Okay. Well, okay. So I'm not going to go there. I guess the question that's on my mind is. And Avery, do you want to sort of jump in on? I guess the question is, yes. Let me do the cue. This is too hard, right? Okay. So you were first, then Avery. Okay. So we'll let Don go, and then Avery, and then back to me in a minute.
Well, the follow-up question I had there is, we're focusing on registrar. What are the procedures out there, and how much have they come up where a registry may have problems with privacy issues?
That's back to Dan, I think.
I'd want to go check it, but I think in theory the same procedure. I don't know if Steve, you might remember better, but if it's on its face a registry and registrar procedure, or if not, then we would follow the same procedure or something analogous to it. We have had a couple of registries that have come to ICANN and said we want to modify our WHOIS obligations because we think we have an issue under local laws, and it's been a. I'm way into territory. I'd rather kind of carefully document the steps of exactly what happened. But ICANN undertook through public consultation changes to those agreements, at least taking those procedures in light. I think there was debate at the time whether the actual procedure had been triggered and the groundwork was there that ICANN would have to follow that procedure. But at any rate, we took it into account when handling that registry request to modify it to his obligations.
So it's a procedure that's been tested at the registry level, not at the registrar level, but presumably it would operate in a similar way, all the caveats of thinking memo to follow. So if we go down that route, then let me recap, I think, what I've heard, which is today all registrars in all jurisdictions operate by the same RAA agreement requirements for publishing WHOIS data. However, there is a possible avenue to vary those requirements based on jurisdiction, and that proposal, that process would be the way to do that if that was ever needed. But today, the choices, and this is back to this nub issue that is interesting to me. Today, there went the network. I'm not going to worry about it. There has been no ability for a registrant to shop registrars for privacy, and thus the transition from thin to thick and the privacy issue of losing that shopping is moot because everybody's been operating under the same data collection requirements. Am I tracking on that, Dan? Avery, I'm getting good facial expressions. You want to jump in?
Not until you give me permission.
Oh, well, you always have permission, Avery. You know that. Anyway, go. Do you want to jump in and then come back to Dan?
Okay, thanks. First of all, apologies for being late. I was trying to call in sick, but then I realized that having this issue disposed of without having come in to talk of it would have made me even sicker. So, first of all, I wanted to take issue with a couple things. It's not that they can pick and choose. That is an issue. The issue is the people living in all these jurisdictions have certain rights. As ICANN has said multiple times, it doesn't matter what our policies or contractual conditions say. Of course, they do not expect anyone to break their local law. They have the obligation, first and foremost, to respect their local law. Now, what's happened with these privacy directives, for example, in Europe, is the EU came up with them a while ago, and the various countries seem to be catching up in terms of enforcement. EU is starting to catch up in terms of enforcement. So all of these registrants currently have a set of rights. Now, it's unfortunate, perhaps, that no one has sued any of these registrars yet for their privacy protections, and perhaps one of the strategies that we should have taken was to encourage a couple lawsuits against registrars so that now we wouldn't be talking quite as theoretically, but we would actually have somebody being sued, and I think that's a great idea, and, you know, deep down, I kind of hope it happens, though I dearly would regret it for the registrar. But the point is that they do have rights. Whereas the set of rights that they might have at a registry based in the U.S. are obviously very much lower in terms of their privacy protections. That's why we are seeing various efforts to get major U.S. corporations to deal with those rights. But they don't have to. The U.S., you know, doesn't really have to ever accept those EU rights. And certainly it wouldn't be the law that one would have those rights in the U.S. So that, I think, is that jurisdictional change that basically removes people's rights. It would basically be ICANN saying, even if you didn't pick it for that reason, that I'm trying to get to that issue, sort of saying, that's irrelevant. It could be relevant. I know it's relevant for me in terms of what project I'm doing. Yes, I went and got a registrar in Iceland because I wanted Iceland's rules. So I've at least done that in one case. But and so perhaps I'm the one that'll actually end up doing the suit in Iceland. But that is, I think, a major point in that. So the nub of the issue, as you're describing it, that everyone has the equal conditions, is not the case. They may have a contract that has the same words, but the conditions they're under are the ones that their jurisdiction mandate. And that's what we change when we mandate that data moves to the U.S. and that data is subject for view under U.S. law, Nebraska law, the law of the registry. So we are materially changing the privacy conditions that those people live under. And that's where I find us having a real problem, in that we are forcing the removal of a right. I found it unfortunate when the board on its own, or maybe it was a staff on its own, decided not to grant that right to new GTLD registrants, but they didn't. So there's very little to argue about except for, of course, presumptive policymaking. But in terms of this condition, those people do have those rights. And I don't see where we could sort of take it upon ourselves to sort of say, rights you had, you no longer have, because we've decided that a U.S., that this need to have one law predominate is the point. So that's what I wanted to add there.
Hang on, Alan. So just to add to my little list, I want to make sure that, you know, one of the things I'm building on the screen is this list of where these requirements come from. So we have the RA, the RAA, the registrar agreement, and I think what I'm trying to check in with Avery is another source of requirements is local privacy law on the registrant. Or local privacy rights.
The local privacy rights of the registrant.
Of the registrant. Okay. Just want to make sure I'm capturing that right. Okay, I got Alan, and then Jim, and anybody else? I'll let you stay with Wrinkled Brow for a while, because you can see why this is an interesting puzzle. And there... Okay, go.
First, on what Avery was talking about, it's quite true that the registry, if it's in a jurisdiction such as the U.S., which has far fewer privacy laws than Ireland, Europe, whatever, and it's a big but, the registrar who operates under those privacy laws is still required under current WHOIS rules, under the current contracts, to make the information available. Avery is saying no.
A contract cannot force someone to do something against the law.
I understand, but I haven't heard of any evidence that it is anything against the law. The registrar-registrant agreement is required to ask and get permission from the registrant to display the data. And currently that data is displayable, is exported all around the world in various databases. People sell it. So although it might be that acting purely as a local agent the data may not be displayable unless they get permission. They do get permission. And the data is available. For instance, there are retention laws saying you can only retain data for 2 years in some jurisdictions. However, what is on WHOIS right now in a thin WHOIS model, the data from the registrar may be, need to be purged 2 years after the registration, but that data lives on forever.
Yeah, Joe, and then...
Thanks.
You see, you're back in your job, and you're doing a darn fine job at it. So back to you, Barry, for the cue. Carry on.
Okay, so I just wanted to echo Dan's position. I think that we don't want to make interpretations of agreements here on the fly, but just to clarify, I think there is a difference, especially when you look at .jobs, and we're the back-end provider at VeriSign for employee media operating .jobs. So again, I'm a little bit on thin ice. I'm not making a legal assessment, but there's a difference between the data that's collected by the registry from the registrars and the data that's displayed. So when we think of WHOIS, we kind of often lump all of that together. In the case of .jobs, there is what you'd refer to typically as thick data that is collected and passed to employee media because they have registration requirements that need to be met in order to validate that it's an appropriate registration. But the WHOIS provides thin data. So, I just bring that up not to say that you know that's a model that's used elsewhere, but you know that's a I think an important distinction in terms of what data is being passed which has the jurisdictional questions, but it's also the public access of that information. So, I just wanted to clarify that on .jobs. And I think Dan's also right. .name, back when Global Name Registry was operating it, I think was the first one that came back and made some changes to their registry agreement in order to comply with some of the privacy laws for .eu. So I just wanted to make those two clarifications.
And before I go to you, I just want to add one thing. This working group is only looking at the impacts of the transition from thin to thick. You're looking at more than that, you rascal. You've blown your scope all out of play. All right. The really interesting one for me, anyway, is the transitional one. Go ahead.
Yeah, Frederick.
If I can just ask folks to identify yourselves. Could you identify yourself for the record on your comments?
Sorry, I guess Joe Waldron from VeriSign.
Oh, thanks. And as I said earlier, I think a lot of folks out there are primarily looking at the transition issues, but the charter does require us to look at whether ICANN in the future should be requiring thick WHOIS.
Frédéric Guillemot, Mail Club. Just to echo also what we said, I mean the registrant when they place an order at the registrar, and I'm happy I'm a registrar, I didn't have any lawsuit for the moment. But they accept to pass on the data to the registry. So that's, I think, at some point we just considered that it was not an issue anymore, from what I understood, because they accept to pass it. And I guess if one day then the registry changed to jurisdiction, they will have to warn the registrant to gain another acceptance. But they click. Maybe they don't read the terms and conditions, but they click on the small one.
Carlton?
Thank you, Carlton Samuels, for the record. I'm picking up on a couple of issues. First of all, it would be intriguing while, after all this while, you haven't had any lawsuits from registrants, and that tells you something, it sends something, because there's something called informed consent. The rules under which the contracts are made usually says what the jurisdiction they would the participants would subject themselves to. I'm from a common law country, and I'm used to looking at contracts, and I've never seen a contract that doesn't outline to you where jurisdictional access is for the parties to the contract. And that is usually very clear. The second thing is, and
even in countries where you see privacy laws, there is an exception for informed consent. If the registrant is informed of their rights and what the requirement is to register a domain, and they accept the terms and conditions, that is something that isn't, it seems always not to be recognized in these arguments. The third thing is this. In a transitionary state, you're always going to have to deal with the issue of what the legal environment is that the database is going to end up. And that, for more than many reasons, will determine what the stand is for the registry. But that still would not relieve them of either the right to go back to ICANN and ask for a variation in the agreement, or they accept the terms of the existing agreement. The point I'm making is this. There is ample opportunity, even with transition, to make changes. And maybe why you are not seeing so many lawsuits is probably because these things are actually being adhered to by the actors. Thank you.
And so we have Kathy, Aubrey, and then Wendy.
Let me just jump in real quick and compliment Kathy. Kathy's not a member of the working group. She was in the audience. She wants to address us. She's come to the table so that we know that she does. She got in the queue. So if any of the others would like to join this conversation, just find a chair near a microphone and do what Kathy did. Carry on, Kathy. Kathy Kleiman for the transcript.
And thank you to Marika for signaling that I was allowed to do it. I wasn't sure what the rules were. Excellent discussion, everyone. Let me introduce myself. My name is Kathy Kleiman. I'm a member of the Non-Commercial Stakeholders Group and also an alumna of the Who Is review team. So this is, you know, WHOIS is an issue that some of us around the table have been dealing with for a long time. And it's nice to see people who haven't been stuck dealing with it for 10 years dealing with it as well. So an observation and then a question, and some of this is follow-up to Aubrey. But the observation is I'm hearing about transition and transition, let me just double-check. The big 800-pound gorilla in the room is the transition of .com, which would be to VeriSign, the registry located in the United States, with 100 million records. We have 100 million registrants in .com. And so some percentage are U.S. registrants. Some good percentage, one assumes, are not. So coming from European countries with data protection, Japan with data protection, Canada with data protection, South Korea with data protection. I don't know to what extent you've looked at the statistics, but I worry about this. And it seems to be a scale entirely different than .org. So observation. Now the question, I see Olaf here from the Weirds group. And the question is about consideration of the future, especially since, as Don pointed out, this is about a recommendation for Thick Who Is on all future registries, as I understand it, not just the new GTLDs in round one who have been mandated Thick Who Is, but round 2, 3, 4, and 14. So as I understand it, some of the new protocols may have something we've talked about for years, which is tiered access, the ability perhaps not to display certain data. And that data might then be made available through the protocol and, God willing, due process to different groups that might need it for reasons that through policy we decide together people should see that data. So law enforcement, intellectual property, and others who might need the data for investigative purposes. What happens now in a Thick Who Is environment? And I open this to Dan and others, and I know this is hard. But have you thought about it, and what happens now, and under whose jurisdiction does the reveal take place if you've moved registrant data from a thin who is, from the local registrar that I know, and I know where they're located, perhaps to a registry in Saudi Arabia or Iran or some other country, How is that handled, and have you thought about the implications of that? And if that's not clear, I'm happy to keep trying to clarify, because it's a complicated question.
I'm just going to let Barry take us through the queue for a while, because we're, you know, we've built quite a queue, and then we'll sort of try and circle back to all this stuff.
So we have Aubrey, Wendy, and then Stephen.
Hi, Aubrey Doria again. Looking at the notion of implied consent, first of all, obviously I'm not a lawyer. I don't even play one on TV or in these rooms. But I know that the rules on implied consent do differ. And I know that there are jurisdictions where you can't give up your right. You know, a right is a right, and it remains a right, and you can sign any contract you want, but that doesn't give up your rights. In other countries, yes, you can sign away your rights at the drop of a penny. There's also the issue with the European privacy rules, I would expect, that it's not that the rights were new, but the declaration of those rights and the codification of those rights came after one side that implied consent, if indeed there was an implied consent that allowed you to give up those rights. So are we saying that having in the past at some point accepted a situation where you had no rights, it doesn't matter that the rights were now declared, you don't have them? Or indeed, does everyone within the EU, within any registrant within the EU, indeed have those privacy rights now that they could enforce? I do agree it's still too bad that no one has taken this to court yet, but I don't think that ICANN should get in the business of sort of saying we want minimalist protective policies until somebody sues us. You know, that basically we need to sort of understand and uphold the rights that of privacy that people have. So I think that the implied consent sounds like a really, you know, killer argument. But A, we don't know to what degree it applies in all places, and B, to what extent it applies to rights that have been recognized long after you did your signing.
Thanks. Wendy Seltzer from the Non-Commercial Stakeholder Group. An interested observer of the working group, and I've long been interested in the WHOIS and privacy issues. So to follow Aubrey, we should also need to recognize that ICANN is making policy in its determination of what registrants have to sign when they agree to registrar accreditation agreements. That ICANN is setting the conditions for users of the domain name system, and we, as the stewards of this process, should not be saying every person who wants to register a domain name must give up privacy rights, must consent to the display of private information in a public WHOIS, but rather we should be giving people more substantive options there. So I don't think we should be accepting, well, because we can put an adhesion contract on them, we should, but rather let's give people better choices. We're also making policy for existing and future top-level domains. So while currently much of the debate is around a couple of thin registries that are facing pressure to go thick, we're looking at future rounds as we discuss this. And I would like for us to leave open the option that future registries can choose different models, and that future registrants looking at their registration options for domain names can choose based on those considerations as well as what the string happens to look like.
Barry, I'm going to jump in.
the beauty of being the chair. As Wendy just touched on a point that I sort of want to inject back into the conversation, one of the things that I've done in my little notes has said, look, this is a puzzle. What kinds of things can we do to mitigate the puzzle? And one of the suggestions that came out was, well, maybe we warn people when this transition happens and the whole informed consent thing. But one of the other things that Dan brought up, and I'm by now Dan is going to be pretty unwilling to speak much because he's really going to want to write a memo, and I get that. So I'm going to put words in your mouth, and if I get them wrong, just let me know. But otherwise, I don't want to put you on the spot. But one of the things that's come out is this notion that maybe a registrar in a jurisdiction could get a variance, just like registries have done in the past. Maybe a registrar in a privacy-friendly jurisdiction could apply for a similar variance and then provide the people, you know, I'll pick on Avery, who for whatever reason wants to be in a different privacy regime than the one of the registry. Maybe the way through this little puzzler is to introduce the idea as a mitigation of permitting variants of registrars to preserve that choice. And then the mitigation would be that as this transition takes place, one of the things that could happen would be that people who want the different privacy standard in a jurisdiction could change registrars. So I've got Dan's, my goal in a face-to-face meeting is to have everybody's brow wrinkled. I mean, that's the thing. This is not a no-brainer, and that's the reason why it's such an important part of this conversation and the reason that I picked this topic for this face-to-face thing. And now back to you, Barry, and on with the queue.
Thank you, Steve Metallitz. Let me just respond to a few of the things that have been said. Kathy's correct that we're now in a period where there may be changes to, in fact, we're not even going to be calling it Who Is anymore. We'll be calling it Registrant Data Directory Service. I'm still working on deprogramming myself here on that. That is going on, and but I would hate to see, at the same time, we started this process with the issue report and setting up the working group and so on and so forth, probably close to a year ago now was the genesis of this. And it would be a shame, I think, if to say, well, let's put this on ice until we see where everything ends up with the Who Is expert group and whatever comes after that, which I understand will be discussed later today. When people say the process is broken, that would be Exhibit A, because that saying, here we have a narrow, well-defined, well-focused problem, and ICANN is incapable of dealing with it until it does some a lot of other much more complicated and complex issues. Second, on implied consent, there's a little bit of deja vu here. If you look back to what the Who Is working groups back around the time of the Bucharest, Rome, Montreal, 2002 to 2004, roughly, there was a lot of discussion about whether registrars should be required to do more to explicitly obtain consent. Should there be a, you mentioned that there's a click, and that's the consent. Well, should they have a separate click just on this issue, which is now more common than it was perhaps then, that you have a separate click where you accept a privacy policy or whatever. The registrars strongly opposed that at that time. I assume that it might have come up in the negotiations over a registrar accreditation agreement. I don't see anything about it in the proposed revision of the registrar accreditation agreement. And even so, it really is not the topic of this working group. Again, it's a much broader topic affecting every single GTLD registrant. And finally, just again, as a bit of a reality check, when we talk about the hypothetical Nebraskan who wants to be to keep the registration separate. Well, just two things to remember. One is we do have there is something called a proxy registration, and whether how you feel about it and what it is, pro or con, it's actually, I mean, it's not as big as .com, but it's about a third of the size of .com. There are 30 million proxy registrations in the GTLD world, so people do use that mechanism. And second, you know, although sometimes we don't, since this organization is about the domain name system, or to a great extent, we sometimes don't pay attention to the fact there are many ways to have an extremely robust online presence and live a full virtual life without registering a domain name in this, at the second level in a generic top-level domain. That's all we are talking about within ICANN, and within this working group, we're actually talking about even a smaller subset of that. So let's kind of put that in context. Thank you.
So we have Ola, Don, and gentleman across in the queue.
So there was a question lurking about authentication and in words, where I got the question, to paraphrase it, as suppose I'm queried from I've got my data in a thick registry, and there might be some jurisdiction limitations. Does Weirds have the mechanisms to make that distinction? Weirds itself does not have the possibility to make that distinction, but there is an authentication model in Weirds where the back end of that authentication model could basically maintain a database of which registrations fall under which jurisdiction, and in the back end, for instance, go out and query certain places for what is allowed and what is not. But that's all back end processing, which needs to be transformed in giving a flag back to the to the database. For this user, please show this data. So this is all back-end stuff. Weirds basically allows for the user to give a set of credentials and then get returned an answer that is based on that set of credentials. How the server determines what data belongs to that or what data that credential is allowed to see is back-end processing.
So many thoughts, so little time. I did want to come back to Kathy's point, though, about tiered access.
This is Don Blumenthal.
I'm sorry. I violated my own request, didn't I?
Yeah. And as long as I've interrupted you, we're going to have to chop it pretty short because we've got the opening session in about 5 minutes, so everybody has to speak very succinctly from now on. Go for it.
I'll go back to my parents' New York roots. Let's talk faster. Tiered access has been out there for a while. You mentioned 10 years. I've been at this mess for 15. Who has issues never die. But there was tiered access called CRISP a number of years ago under the IRIS protocol that really never went anywhere. And it's one thing to say that the protocol supports it, but then it's going to be ICANN's job to make policy decisions as to whether tiered access should be allowed, under what circumstances, and I was on the law enforcement side at the time, and I think it's fair to say that even if it's possible, there are severe questions as to whether it's practicable, given all some underlying issues that are there.
Klaus Stoll, NPOC, Non-Commercial Stakeholder Group. Maybe what I'm saying is very naive and simplistic, but I want to come back to AFRI. AFRI several times said, a pity nobody sued. Wouldn't it be a good idea to go to the jurisdictions and actually explain to them, look, we are trying to move from thin to thick, this is what's going to happen. What is the position of your restriction? And if the European Union or the different jurisdiction have a problem with it or have something like that, then the variant can be built in. But instead of waiting till somebody sues, isn't it not possible to find out what's actually the position of the different jurisdiction is first?
How are we doing on queue and time here?
We just have Wendy in the queue. We've got 7 minutes
okay.
left. And Olaf, you might want to turn your mic off just in case.
Very quickly, Wendy Seltzer, in response to Klaus, it's a useful suggestion that was tried in some of the earlier questions about by registries and registrars, and the response that they got was that the Data Protection Commissions and won't give advisory opinions. So like U.S. courts that won't rule on an issue until it comes up in a litigation, they won't give that kind of advice, and so unfortunately we can't use that.
Sorry to come in again, it's Klaus Stoll. So if that stupid option is there, why don't we do agreed suing so that somebody actually agrees with the registrar to sue him and they go through the process just to find out what the law situation is.
And with that, you can now understand why I love working groups. I mean, this is the kind. This happens once a week, for an hour a week, and this is the heart of ICANN for me. This is why I participate, because there are a bunch of really smart people working really hard on some really interesting puzzles, and you just got to see an hour of it. Thanks for being here. Thanks for all of you for coming. Thanks for you for coming and joining us. Next meeting. And thanks, Marika, for being Marika and keeping me on track. So, no, we will not meet in 1 week. Avery's so disappointed. We will meet in 2 weeks. And we may have a little bit of light attendance. Don mentioned that he may not be able to join us, but we are trying to get an initial report done by Durban. We don't have very many weeks between now and then, so we'll see you all in 2 weeks, and thanks.